Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Michael, Jeannie, if anybody's there, if they're talking, they're muted. Well, just on the off chance that I'm actually on, this is Tim Hayes here for Mindshifter Radio. This is Aramaic Friday, and hopefully at some point in time we'll have Dale Allen Hoffman joining us. And Michael and Jeannie, someone's running the switchboard.
Thanks, Tim.
Because it told me I was unmuted. Hi, Jeannie, how are you?
How are you?
Good. I was just sitting talking away, and it was really weird. So I'm not sure what happened there, but go continue. You're doing great.
Well, we're here.
All right, rock and roll.
Take it away, Dr. Rice.
Well, thank you for opening the space, and we are still in Las Vegas and getting ready actually to move out of a timeshare today into another location, and then we do Mind Shifters and Still Point Vision tomorrow and head on into the big city of Pahrump to do some work out there. So things are moving along here rather rapidly. I heard from Dale, and he's driving across the great state of Wisconsin, and he said he might have a spotty reception, so he's going to be joining us just as quickly as he possibly can. So let's just check with Jeannie and see if Dale is with us.
He is.
Okay, hello. Well, let's say hello to the young man.
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, sir.
Good, I'm glad it's coming through. Yeah, my service has been a little funky here. I've been in the middle of Wisconsin, so hopefully I'll stay on the whole time.
Well, we'll hold the space that that will happen for both of us as we deal with the challenges of being on the stealth. But what's on your mind today, sir?
Well, I'm on my way to Minnesota later today. I've got events at Unity North Spiritual Center in Coon Rapids, Minnesota, tomorrow and Sunday, and then I'm at Unity South in South Minneapolis Monday night, and then back to Woodstock, Illinois on Tuesday with Dr. Kim.
Sounds like a great schedule.
Yeah, it's been great. My daughter Lucy's with me, Lucinda. We were in Chicago last night, which was kind of a trip for her. I think that's the biggest city she's ever been in, with being old enough to remember it, because, of course, she was in New York City when she was 4 months old, but she don't remember that one too well.
Right. Well, hi, Lucinda.
She's got headphones on. She's in another world, listening to music.
She's on another planet right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, our conversation is that of looking at the Aramaic perspective on life, just a little different than what our culture teaches us about how the world works, and coming to understand from that Aramaic perspective just exactly what really is going on. And so we welcome everybody to the show. We're honored and blessed that you choose to be with us and to spend this time, and that we get to share the understanding of these ancient Aramaic ideas as they apply in the real world. And one of the things that that strikes me is how often people, you know, they think they're so intellectually superior, and they blow off what Yeshua had to say as though he's some kind of crackpot religious leader, when the truth is he is absolutely the most brilliant psychologist, the most knowledgeable physiologist, the most amazing physicist, and one of the most enlightened geneticists you'll ever meet. And when you start looking into the Aramaic, you find that there is so much ancient wisdom there, but the provincial minds that have listened to the Greek think that they've got some understanding of what's going on, and they have no idea. There's been an interesting twist happened. And what has occurred is this intellectual world has made the only solution to life look like the enemy. I mean, I can't tell you how many circles we go in. And, you know, when you recognize the scriptural principle that God is love, you know, Jeannie was invited to do a woman's retreat in Costa Rica back several months ago. And there were some other women who were putting this together. It was under the auspices of a person who owned the center. And there were three or four other women involved, and they were of the enlightened variety, yoga teachers, Nia teachers, that sort of thing. And Jeannie was coming in to do the process work, and they went to our website, and their response literally was, because Jeannie used the word God in her purpose statement, that her stuff was not acceptable. No, we're not doing that. The solution, the only solution there is, the active presence of love, has been made the enemy. And I know that last year we were setting up to go to, we were in Sweden and we were heading to Norway. We actually had booked a retreat center in Norway. They had contacted us and booked us. And along about the time we were getting ready to create buy our tickets, we actually got a phone call saying, we looked at the website and watched one of your videos, and you used the word Jesus. You're not welcome at our center. And these intellectual minds that have been brainwashed into God only knows what, this Greek mythology game that causes them to reject the only solution that's out there. Is just amazing. And pardon me, I shouldn't say the only solution. I should say one of the deepest understandings of the solution to the game of life. So many people just reject because it's been turned around backward. And it's just interesting to watch how the intellect does that. And then when someone takes the time to sit still and hear some of this Aramaic wisdom, how quickly people start to tap in and go, oh, my God, I didn't know that was possible. I didn't know that's what was going on. So it's just interesting. And do you have any thoughts along that line, Dale?
You know, you're resonating a lot for me here because when people do ask me, one of the questions I get asked a lot is, you know, what's the most challenging thing about what I do, if I was really completely honest about it? Being away from my family, if I'm doing a lot of road stuff, it's prejudice. And I don't mean prejudice in terms of necessarily skin color, you know, young or sort of, you know, early middle-aged American white boy. You know, a lot of people will listen to the Jesus stuff coming from that. But I mean prejudice in terms of people, number one, not caring or wanting to hear what I'm doing because it's Jesus stuff, or people will label it Christian, or honestly, in a lot of places, I'll roll in. And this one I can kind of understand, and I love to play with it. People see what I look like, you know, long hair, I've got the beard that's growing down, the blue of gray in it. I actually look like the westernized, you know, idea of Jesus. And people look me up and down and see that I'm not wearing shoes before I walk on stage. And they basically make the choice, well, I don't really care what the guy has to say. And then they sit there and then they come up at the end and they go, you know, I wasn't expecting much when I saw you, but once I heard you, you know, you're not half bad. But so I kind of have fun with that. But the thing that really is the and I mean, I'm always digging out inside of myself, removing the roots of what may attract that one way or another in my life. But yeah, the challenge that, you know, I'm constantly reclarifying and cleaning my perception of is, you know, people come in and they just have preconceived notions that they've already got what, you know, whatever it is figured out, and they come in, like as an example, people that I've known for many years, oh, well, Dale's a Bible banger, or Dale's a Bible hater, or Dale's a Jesus freak, or Dale's a Jesus hater, or Dale, whatever it may be, instead of, you know, just kind of, I took some guys off guard at a coffee shop in Asheville a couple days ago, because he was asking me certain questions, and with certain questions, my answer was, you know what, I don't know. And he was like, what? What do you mean you don't know? And I'm like, well, what about that's freaking you, you know, making you feel like you're freaking out? He's like, actually, it's not that. He said, I've never heard someone say, I don't know. Everybody always seems to, you know, have it all figured out. And I tell them, if there's any magic to the reason that energy, presence, consciousness, whatever you want to call that, flows through me, is because I'm able to be in that fluid state with sort of a, I call it the cosmic question mark above my head, and I don't need to have it all figured out. What I want or what I do seek in my life is to be in process, to be experiential, to have a direct experience, to not necessarily know what may or may not be happening or what the facts are. You can put the word facts in quotes. But, that, you know, like I always say, I'm putting the pen to the paper, and I'm in the processes, and I'm living it, and I'm walking the talk. And in the end, to me, I mean, that's my intent in this life is to be open in the direct experience of this present moment and to be ever vigilant of removing the roots of whatever it may be, whatever the bushel baskets may be that are concealing my presence in any present moment. And a lot of people, they feel panicked in the presence of someone that's that wide open because it doesn't feel like everything's nailed down to the ground. In a way, I'll often hear that people feel like I'm hanging over an edge backward or something. And I tell them, you know, there's no edge. It's just the present moment. But the reason that we are so anti-present moment, and in a lot of cases anti-wanting to know what the real Jesus teachings actually said, is because we know, as an example, an Orthodox Christian, when they hear what I do, most of them, they don't want to hear anymore because they instinctively know, they can feel that it's going to bring up whatever bushel baskets they have are going to have to come up in relation to Jesus stories. So they'll literally put their hand up and say, I don't want to hear it. I don't care. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about the Council of Nicaea. I don't want to hear about Aramaic. I don't want to hear about Greek mistranslations. I don't want to hear about the King James or Jerome's Latin Vulgate. I just want to be left alone. And I think that's very interesting. And then they'll go down to the next person in the line and start spouting their Jesus stuff. Bless their heart, but that's not enough for me, you know.
Yeah. And in essence, what they're saying is, don't bother me with the truth. I've already made up my mind. And
exactly
my
it.
Feedback to people who live in that world is, if your mind is capable of any form of hostility or fear still today, then you're kidding yourself and you don't know. And when you were talking about how you're hanging out on the edge and there's this opening and you're in the question that you always wanted to be taught, you actually remind me of one of my favorite, what I call Aramaicisms, an idiom, and maybe you might want to fill a little bit of this one in, but where we hear Yeshua saying, you must eat my body and drink my blood, and the world, you know, the non-being mind has a cheap copy of everything real in the spiritual dimension, and that's been made something about, you know, taking in wafers and drinking wine. In truth, it's an Aramaic idiom that means you're going to have to understand everything that I understand. You're going to have to be open to bringing into your structure such a complete understanding that you will be able to replicate what I'm doing. You know, when he says, the things I do, you can do, and greater, he's saying that the only way you can do that, this eat my body, drink my blood, is an idiom for you've got to comprehend, you've got to integrate everything that I'm talking about. And of course, the mind who buys into some church's dogma, and when you recognize there's something like 41,000 different sects of Christianity, every one of them standing there pounding the table that they have the truth and you're going to hell if you don't believe what they have to say. It's like, what would you suppose the chances are of someone in one of those 41,000 denominations that's pounding the table in their anger and rage, which one of them do you suppose really knows about the active presence of love and what Yeshua actually taught? You know, it's like, good luck. If you're still capable of hostility or fear, you haven't integrated even the first law, and that is that you've not maintained a condition of love in your mind. And your words tend to flow from that. They can't flow from hostility or fear. So really, you know, eating my body and drinking my blood is such an important concept to understand. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that idiom, that first century idiom there is basic. If that saying, it's 100% or nothing. It's not 99.9. And the word that I love to pull out there is when he says that word for blood is that word dama, which means blood, juice, wine, sap, or essence. And the realization of that is essentially, there's something that I used to love that Wayne Dyer had said 20 years ago, he probably still says it today, where he would say, you know, he said it to me once in New York City when I was like 19 years old, we're looking in each other's eyes, it was maybe 91 or 92, I just started waking up at the time, and he said, Dale, what happens when you squeeze a lemon? And I said, well, you get lemon juice. He said, what happens when you get squeezed? And that's basically that idea of essence, that what happens when you're in those moments when processing's a bit more intense and it's not quite so simple and it's not so clearly laid out, and you're pushed to what would be called in Aramaic the peak of the temple, which would be the evolutionary moment of truth when the energy system, the Aramaic Kaikla, that body temple, is at a point in energy where it's burning from one, you could say, from one level to another, you know, a car shifting from fourth to fifth, and it's going to get to that point on the top of the fourth gear where it's going to feel overloaded, and it's going to feel like it's breaking down in some ways, and you're going to hear it straining a little bit. But if you keep the catalyst there and you use the clutch, and you're able to work into that and that willingness of the cosmic breeze, then that energy system, the temple can bump up into the higher level. Now, if you're going 100% fully present in this moment and you're in the essence of what Yeshua was in, that dhamma, in the essence of the moment, and you're in those moments of, like I say, the evolutionary moments of truth where it's the point of entropy where either the system's going to break down or it's going to go up into a higher level, our culture tells us when we start getting into the moments of overload, stop, pull back, remove the catalyst, and then lay back down again, hunky-dory, and let everything go calm again. But Yeshua was saying that, look, if you don't come 100% present into this space, there's no way in those moments of truth that you're ever going to be able to expand into the higher, greater vision that you have. We ask for it, and then it shows up, and it feels like we're falling apart, but what's falling apart is the old us. And it literally is. It's not 99%. It's 100%. And you find the essence, the sap, the blood of whatever you are in those moments of peak experience when this is your chance, this is your opportunity to shift into a different quantum reality or just remove the catalyst, get quiet again, lay back down, and start to slumber again. Sleep on.
Well, Michael, if you're talking, we can't hear you.
My apology. I'm back. If you you think about that thing of being squeezed and the way that we talk about it in this work is when the stress is up and the chips are down, one of the things you can tell is exactly who people's gods are, the gods they really love. You can tell when they're squeezed because they will turn to their god in the moment when the stress is up and the chips are down. So the person who turns to rage, to intimidation, to fear, when the stress is up and the chips are down, that's who they really love. They don't have any relationship with love at all. They spout those words. Yeshua talked about this 2,000 years ago. There'll be many people who will come to me calling my name, but in essence what he says is their hearts are far from me. That is, the gods they love, what they hold within themselves and worship and turn to when the stress is up and the tips are down, are their hostility and fear. and to start to recognize that we need to make a shift and forgive that allegiance to hostility or fear and actually literally get back to relationship with love, which, you know, again, is the first law. You can't move anywhere with the law and the prophets until you can comprehend that first law.
It's one of those things that runs so rampant in standard Orthodox, whatever you want to call it, Christianity today, that it's about the judgment. It's the homophobia. It's the fear. It's the Democrats. It's, you know, the liberals. It's whoever doesn't look exactly like me and what my concept or my exactly that, my God, small g God, whatever my concept is, whatever it is that I worship, and anything that doesn't fit into that, I'm going to attack and I'm going to fight against it, not realizing that there's nothing to attack or fight against except what's inside of me. And it's unfortunate that, and that's why I'm so dedicated as well to what I do and what you do, Michael, because it really is about getting it to every mind and heart on the planet and letting people know, look, if you're feeling it, you own it. This is your stuff. There is no such thing, like as an example in the extreme of Islam, there is no such truth that your hostility and fear is the will of God. It's the ultimate mind game that we can even play on the extremities of any kind of religious culture, is to somehow think that my hostility and fear is somehow God-given. And then we start lashing out against the world when it even says right there in the Quran that you must first align that which is within before you project it out. And that's the catch. If you're aligned within, there is nothing to project out. But it's really easy to forget that. When Yeshua says the same thing, you know, that in which you judge another, you are guilty of practicing. But we can forget that one, too. It's easier that way because things stay nice and copacetic and easy to control, and I don't have to feel whatever it is that's inside of me. I can just keep it locked down and believe whatever I want to believe.
Absolutely. And so when you look at the solution, and I think this is an appropriate place to bring it up once again, the solution lies in first century Aramaic forgiveness. That is, if when you're squeezed, you turn to the God of fear, intimidation, hostility, rage, guilt, grief, manipulation, threat. You know, one of the big threats is, you know, those people who are filled with their terror and their rage will actually threaten children with hell. And that's so ungodly. That's so unlike love. No, I don't know if maybe you want to hit your mute button. We're getting a lot of noise feeding back, or at least I'm hearing some.
Okay.
But maybe in between comments, maybe you could hit the mute button and it might be a little cleaner. Cool. So to actually reach inside oneself and forgive, when what many people want to do, and actually if we hadn't been doing Aramaic Fridays today, I'd be bringing forward a conversation from a couple of folks that I've had in the last few nights in the workshop, and they have such an unwillingness to hear. You know, they talk about, like, there was a woman at the workshop the other night, and she's talking about how, you know, she had the perfect childhood, she had no power person issues, she just gets angry. But then, you know, a minute later, her anger's gone, so it's okay, there's nothing to talk about. And so I invite her to start to deal with her anger. Well, you know, I don't have to, I don't have anything to deal with. And yet, every time she stops, she starts talking about her story, about her anger. Talked to a gentleman this morning who had a friend commit suicide yesterday, and he's in a lot of disturbance and upset, and so I invite him to go to the website and pull out a worksheet and actually begin to forgive. And he just goes round robin into the conversation about how, well, you know, we need to change things, and this is a problem, and that's a problem. It's like, yeah. And what I'm inviting you to do is to go inside yourself and clean up your capacity for hostility and fear. And people just tend to be skin and want to tell their story. I got a phone call from someone this morning who's dealing with a person they're trying to get a project together with. And as they work to get that project together, what happens? The story, instead of let's stop and actually use the tools. And so to integrate that knowing requires that we remove any literal capacity for any form of hostility or fear. And that's what we really want to keep putting before people, so that if being the center of attention by telling one's story, by being lost in their pain and their trauma, to actually doing the work of cleaning up what never belonged. It's such an important thing to do.
You know, there's nothing in those earliest Aramaic texts or Greek texts from the first century in the teachings of Jesus. There's nothing in those earliest texts about hell being some place that you go to after you die. Everything that he spoke of was about, it was all about heaven being a present moment experience. It was never about something that was outside of you that happened after your death. It was something that happens right now. It was those moments when we hit that, the catalyst is burning, and whatever it is, those veils are burning away, the bushel baskets are burning up in that light, and that was the experience that he called hell. And the word that he used for fire in those cases was nofrata, and nofrata is the word light. It's a word that means a reflective light or a conscious light. It's not necessarily, it's not a light as in the light of the sun, that's something that you would see with your eyes that would burn you, but rather it's a light that you feel, or it's a light of awareness. Nukra, the root of that word, is already a feminine gendered term, and by him putting the word ta at the end of it with the word nukrata, it was very, very peculiar and unusual. The only time someone would ever do that back then was when they really wanted to reiterate and strengthen the realization that I'm not talking about a physical fire or a light that will burn you, but in fact I'm talking about a feminine light that's the state of being that you will experience in your consciousness when you have these experiences. And that's what hell was. It was when you brought the light to those places within yourself that the light had been there earlier for. And when you do bring that light, those, whatever those things are in that practice of forgiveness, they get burned up, and it does not feel good. It feels much like it did when it went in, and he called that hell. Unfortunately, just like the kingdom that was eventually placed after your death, that hell thing was also placed after your death, because if you put heaven, hell, and kingdom after death, you got people in this physical life, and you tell them, look, it won't happen until after you die. You have to play by the rules that I tell you you must play by, and you're not going to be able to confirm or deny this until your body drops. So essentially, you've got them locked into that system. And a lot of people, I think a lot of people are having enough of this now, and a lot of people are coming to me saying, you know, what really was written there in those earliest texts? More people are flooding now than ever, but also a lot of people are throwing their hands up quite intensely now and defending. It's almost like the last gasp of that false kingdom is starting to crack and fall away. And when you don't have the tools to be able to do that forgiveness process and remove the root of your suffering, when things do start cracking and falling away, like this Jesus structure that we've had in place really only for a few decades, but in some nuances for a few centuries, when that starts falling apart, it doesn't feel good, and people start being more vehemently hostile and fearful trying to keep that structure together, because they go into a state of panic because they don't know how to do what Jesus taught. And I'm telling people lately, what's most important is not ever having more information. It's not proving your point. It's showing that you live the teachings, and it's showing that you're able to be conscious, active, and present, and actually do what it is you're saying with your mouth we're supposed to be here to do.
Yay, I'll second that. Let's check with Jeannie and see if Jeannie's got anybody in the chat room that has a question relating to the Aramaic, or if there's anybody in the phone queue with a question that relates to the Aramaic. We want to make sure with our questions that we stay on track with Aramaic thinking. So, Jeannie, is there anything happening in either of those places? Anybody with a hand up in the phone queue?
Well, in the chat room, some of the conversation was around being squeezed and asked, when Dyer's talking about being squeezed, is he talking about being stressed or when the stakes are up and the chips are down? And in that moment of overload, does he mean holding love even when you're freaked out? And I said, there's no coincidence. I had just read this morning, there's a thing that I get in email that's called Plain Talk and Ordinary Wisdom by a lady named Pat Ruppel, and she talked about buyers being squeezed. And so I thought that was really cool. So we were commenting about that. We do have a hand up.
Great. Well, let's say hello.
Area code 517, you're on the air.
Pardon me. Hi, you guys. It's Mitzi.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Thank you.
What's on your mind today?
Pardon me?
What's on your mind today?
Well, I do have a couple questions, primarily for Dale, I think, that that I would like clarification on. The first one is on your website, Dale. I see that on the right-hand side it says that Kalamazoo, Michigan is a place of, pardon me, I'm sleep deprived. Oh, I've been up for a couple of days doing birth, but what I'm trying to say is it looks like you're coming to Kalamazoo, Michigan, but when I look at your calendar, I can't find a time this year where you're actually going to be in Michigan. So I'm wondering, indeed, you are. Hello?
Dale, we can't hear you.
Sorry, I was on mute. I was talking away. It's in May. It's right there on my calendar. It's a Sunday. I'm going to be at Unity in Kalamazoo. I can't remember the date, 16th, 17th, somewhere in that area. I'm doing their Sunday service. I can't remember if it was one or two services. And then I'm doing an Aramaic toning and prayer circle after that. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Awesome. I'll go back and look. I thought I looked at every month and I couldn't find it, but I will certainly go back and double check. Thank you. The other question is there an Aramaic, or do you know the Aramaic translation for the prayer to the Divine Mother? I think it's more commonly called the Hail Mary prayer.
Where is it exactly? You're saying the Hail Mary prayer. Is this like the Magnificat, the Annunciation, or?
The prayer that Catholics often pray Hail Mary, full of grace.
That's Catholic. It's not biblical. It's not in the Bible at all. I would have to even look into if that was even, I'm not sure if that was originally written in Greek or Latin. I would say it was probably Latin. I don't know. So, I mean, there wouldn't be a lot of nuance I could really add to that. But it's not in the Jesus teachings. It's not in the Bible. And it's just the Catholic creation. So.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate
that. It's a supplication. It's really a supplication asking for Mary's support in your life is the essence of that one. And drawing in that divine sentiment, feminine, as you say, as support.
I have been feeling very drawn to the Holy Mother and just in the work that I do and also in my own personal life. And so I do say the prayer. I've changed it all up into my own words, but I've said the petition. And I change it to apply to birth instead of death and whatever. But I was
I would encourage that. I would encourage people to sit down, even with a bad translation, and sit in front of it and breathe and bring your heart into it and do what resonates for you, because you can be pretty sure that in a lot of cases you're really getting damaged goods anyway. It's one of those things we were told by the church not to do. Don't do your own translations. You can't do that. You don't have any authority. But the truth is that it's not about wisdom. It's really not about wisdom. It's not about intellect, I should say. About being willing to be open in the moment. And one of the powerful things that I do in some of my workshops is actually do exactly that. I encourage people to do their own translations, and we do that with several lines. I do have my translation of the Magnificat of Mother Mary from the Gospel of Luke, which is incredibly powerful in the Aramaic. There's a whole – everybody's waking up, you know, to the Divine Feminine, to Mary Magdalene, to Mother Mary now, because we've had that, you know, masculine physicality stuff, the framework, the fundamentalism jammed down our throats for so long, that it had to come back into balance. And it's a beautiful, to me, it's a beautiful rebalancing of bringing back. You can't have feminine without masculine. You can't have masculine without feminine. But even more so, it's absurd to think that you can have masculine
without feminine, that somehow the men begat things like they do in the Bible rather than the women, or that it's a kingdom as a place rather than a feminine state of being. It's ludicrous and it's absurd, and I'm really proud, if that's the word, to be a part of bringing that awareness back to the teachings.
Awesome. Is there a place on your website where I might hear the prayer that you just referred to?
Actually, yeah. I'm pretty sure on the audio page of my website that there's a recitation of me speaking the Magnificat. I believe I speak it in Aramaic, followed by Dr. Albert LaChance saying my English translation, and that was recorded at an Episcopalian church in New Hampshire. But I also do have an audio program called A Unitive Vision that's two discs. It's the Lord's Prayer and the Magnificat. It's Albert and I together. But also, if you email me, like message me through my website or Facebook or whatever, I can actually send you a PDF of that translation, too, that you can actually print out and use in your spiritual life. Or if you show up, if you're in Kalamazoo and you show up to an event there, I sell those as parchments as well, too. And if people can't afford them, then I tell them, here, just take it. But I sell that as well on a parchment.
I certainly will intend and set a plan to be there in May. Baby's willing. I will meet you in person and pick one up then. In the meantime, would it be possible to hear it today?
The Magnificat? I would have to have it in front of me, and I'm driving, and I don't have it with me right now. It's one of the most challenging things to pronounce in Aramaic. They weren't very common words that Mary was using, and it's something that I have to see in front of me. I've got to see the actual Estrangella script or the Asherit script in front of me to be able to pronounce, because it's a pretty challenging thing. If you just go on my website, you'll hear it, and you'll understand, like, okay, that's not normal. There's a few places where it almost sounds like a train wreck to someone here in the West. It almost sounds like a train wreck of sounds, because it was very, very guttural. Mohorba. I've got a lot of really odd sounds in it, so... It's right there on my website, though.
Okay. Thank you, Dale. I sure do appreciate the service you provide. That's it for me.
Thank you.
Dale, seeing as how we're on that topic, is there anything else that you could say about it, just from the English perspective, that might help people to get a little more comprehension of your speaking?
You know, absolutely. As a matter of fact, it's... The Magnificat, for some reason, I don't know why, is kind of swept under the carpet, maybe because it's a surrendering prayer, maybe because it's her absolute humility is what it is. It's Mary, Mother Mary, coming into this realization of, hold on a second, how can I be the one? You know, how can my womb be the one to birth the unmanifest divine will? And I do love what... Joseph Campbell says, in referring to Meister Eckhart, he says, you know, how, I'm sort of quoting a quote of Meister Eckhart saying, it's not a miracle of any kind whatsoever about how the Christ should be born in Bethlehem. It's actually, what's important is that the Christ or the Christ consciousness is born through an open or a willing heart. And that's really what the Magnificat is. It's about her saying, there's certain lines there in the English where it's like, you know, that the great one, the one, the absolute, the only being, has beheld the humility of his handmaid and has made me worthy. And it's amazing because she goes in and says certain things that are interesting from the perspective of generations. As an example, she says things like how, surely generations will look upon me, this person of humility, and consider me to be blessed for having had the honor to birth this beautiful Christ will through me. And she goes in there talking about, she mentions Israel in Aramaic, but Israel in the end. And it really is, it's about, the whole prayer is really about being wholly, fully present in this moment, to be empty, to be open, to allow Christ to birth through us, not Christ as a person, which is a masculine, really bad mistake in modern Christianity, is we look at Jesus as Christ, as the Christ rather than a Christ, as one who birthed that will through them, that consciousness through them. When it says right in John 1:14 in the Aramaic, in the Gospel of John, it doesn't just say that the Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us. That word also means within, with, or through. So it birthed within us, and it birthed as us, and it birthed through us. And that's really what the Magnificat is about. It's about us being open in absolute humility, what Michael would say, willingness is the cosmic grease, knowing that in this present moment, in our absolute humility, willingness, and openness, that's how the Christ births through us. And that's the only time it can happen, is right now in this moment.
Well, and another piece that I would add to that, Dale, is the idea of virginity having to do with genitals, when the deeper meaning of that is that we need to make the feminine receptive part of ourselves, that is our physiology, free and clean and clear of hostility and fear. And that it is only when I'm incapable of hostility or fear, it's only when I give up the gods of hostility, fear, threat, rage, guilt, and grief, that pure active presence of love can come through me unfeathered. In other words, not covered with something else. You know, many people tap into that love, but because their physiology has generations and generations and generations of unresolved hate and fear and grief and pain, they cannot cleanly conceive of the pure presence of love. And that the work is about making of your own soil, making of your own feminine aspect, your own body-mind unit, virgin territory, clean, clear of, and that's what Mary symbolizes, is the cleansing of our own vessel so that the vessel can conceive in purity rather than tainting what it conceives of with its own hostility and fear. And that, to me, ties right back into, you know, where Yeshua, they ask him what the first law is, and he says, Rachma, and that this Rachma is a condition of love that you need to maintain within your mind. It is a gateway into which human life enters. Maintain that condition in your mind when you think of the Creator. You look at how many people have rages and hatreds and vengeance toward the Creator. I remember a young man that was in one of our intensives, and he was about 3 years of age, and he was Catholic, and they told him when his mother got cancer that if he just prayed hard enough, his mother would heal. Well, his mother died. You want to talk about rage at God. You know, this little kid is three, and he's told that, you know, he has to pray. And what does he have to deal with 50 years later when he's in an intensive and finally opens and looks at that? He's got to deal with his guilt that he must not have prayed hard enough because his mother died. You know, so many people have such hatred for God. And even in the churches, when you open up, you find that there's a lot of that resentment and hatred toward God. And the condition of Rachma, when you think of the Creator, means that you have nothing in you that's less than love. And then neighbor, which of course in Aramaic means anybody that you think about, that you need to come to the point where you have total purity within you, a sound and purified mind based in the active presence of love, in order to give birth to that state of being. And of course, that's a big chunk of work when you recognize that perhaps the idea has never been thought of within your genetic history, and that you're the one who says, I want to do that. Boy, wouldn't it be a lot easier to just make up a story about how somebody else is going to take care of it for us, and there's nothing for us to do. But that's not what Yeshua says. Yeshua says you must have a sound and purified mind. There is work for you to do. If you want, you know, many people want to do this adoption thing. Well, I'm going to be adopted through Christ into God's family. And that's a religious idea that's developed. But if you listen to Yeshua, he talks about the offspring of God, the children of God, and he specifically says in the Beatitudes what you need to do to achieve that. And it isn't about saying magic words about him. He says, here's what you have to do. You have to be willing to serve humanity. And the type of service you have to do is you must work effectively to produce the peace and understanding in accord with love. That's a tall order. And so let's make up a story that we don't actually have to do what he said to do. But if you go back and listen to him, he didn't say just call my name and say, sprinkle a little blood on me and everything will fall. He says, work effectively to produce, through service, the peace and understanding under in accord with love's will. You will be called the children of God. That's how you get in the family. But, you know, that means that you've got to handle and make up your own genetics and your own physiology virgin territory. Not an easy piece of work to do, not an easy thing to comprehend. The comprehension has been lost, so let's make up an easy theology where you can be saved by saying magic words. And it's just not the truth. It's just not what he taught. And, of course, oftentimes people who chatter about him, you know, as he said, you'll come calling my name, but your heart is far from me. You haven't heard a word I said yet. You don't have the eyes to see. You don't have the ears to hear. And you're not doing the real work. So don't come and chatter my name and say you think you got me on your side, because you don't. There's work to be done. And it's a real and a practical work that needs to be done.
That's exactly it. And, you know, the words that were translated as virgin, actually, in the Jesus teaching, speaking of Mary, there's two words. One is betola, which is referring to a human person that, you know, a human virgin, meaning no physical act. And then there's betulta, which is essentially what you would say the virgin soul, or that ta sound at the end genders it. Betola is already feminine, meaning a woman, a physical human woman who's never done anything of that type. And then there's betulta, which could be a man, a woman, whoever. And what that was one who was open. And all that word Baal, actually the root of that even means, is just pure. It's the word that came out of your mouth several times. Purity, pure, pure, pure. So the Baitola is not a physical human insane, because it actually got into the dark and medieval ages where they would actually pull women out in public in front of hundreds of people in the palaces and would actually have the priests from the church spread women's legs and actually look to see if the hymen had been compromised in any way. And if it was, and they were claiming to be a virgin, then they were burned alive. It's a nice thought. So yeah, that sounds a lot like a Jesus teaching. It's insane. It's completely, literally insane, and it's dark and it's hostile and it's full of fear to think that some physical act of that type is, like, yet Jesus was talking all about physicality, about physical things. He wasn't. His teachings were feminine. They were about perception. They were about states of being. They were about ways of relating with and as life. And when we make that into all of these different fences to live within, rather than what he was saying, which was to allow the fences to fall so that life can live itself through you, then those fences to live within become the carbon copy in the physical world that's somehow supposed to keep you in the fence and safe, that somehow that's going to take the place of actually being lived through consciously to the pure heart, the pure soul, the pure womb of our being right now in this present moment. And nothing can take the place of that, because that's it. That's all. That is what's real. That's the actuality of the situation, is being in that pure space of love right now. And it's something that's so important to me to get across to people. I tell them constantly, you know, in the end, it's not about the information that I'm putting out there. It's about the experience and the realization of what I'm putting out there. It's about putting it into practice. It's about living it. It's about the direct experience. It's not about understanding. It's about standing under. It's about living as the foundation of life itself, rather than taking a pre-built foundation that some intellect outside of you somehow built up, or somehow building the perfect life. I tried for years to build my perfect life until I realized how stupid it was. I let go, and I began to let life build perfection through me, and that changed everything.
Yay, and, you know, you remind me of one of the pseudo-solutions that I talk about in the Codependence to Interdependence workshop. We go through several pseudo-solutions, the thing that the mind thinks will solve its problems. And the number one pseudo-solution is, if I could just figure this out. And we see people in their ivory towers taking these texts and trying to figure them out rather than activating them and doing the work, which, of course, we've talked about on the show before, how much ridicule one experiences if they ask people in the ivory tower to actually put their hand. You know, Yeshua talked to the Pharisees of the day, and he said, you put all kinds of burdens, you put all kinds of loads on people, but you won't put your finger to the work. And today, that's basically the ivory tower. Well, let's argue about this word. Let's debate about this word. Let's talk about that idea. Let's talk about that one. But when somebody says, well, how about if we actually do it? Then everybody has to – now people are – we're back to the idea of squeeze. Now people are squeezed. The stress is up and the chips are down, and you want to watch the fur fly when you actually invite people who are into – their mental masturbation to actually begin to do their work. The people who are calling magic words, you invite them to actually deal with their rage and their guilt and their grief and their fear and to actually breathe through it and to move through it and replace it with love. Now we've got a whole lot of craziness going on.
You know, it's something that it's a funny thing that I don't take personally anymore, though I used to. Like on message boards, on some Aramaic message boards, I'm a pincushion sometimes because I'm actually daring to have people tone the Aramaic words that Jesus spoke, and I actually dare to have them actually try putting it into practice rather than studying it in books. Studying it in a book, do that, have fun with that, but actually live it and put it into practice. And I'm actually made fun of, and you made fun of, actually, on some of these message boards. And at times Rocco Erico is made fun of, although that's a little different, you know, or Neil Douglas Plot. Because I actually, especially, it's sort of Michael and I, because we're like saying, hold on a second here. Yeah, sure, there's nuances of meaning here, but what does the meaning mean if you're not able to live it, if you're not able to put it into practice? If it's an intellectual concept, this sophisticated idea that you pull into your brain and somehow have some kind of relationship with the concept, then you're doing the one, number one, very exact thing that Yeshua said not to do. Don't take the graven image as the direct experience. That there should be no mental concept, graven image, belief, idea, ideology whatsoever between the direct experience and our own present moment experience. Whatever the ideology is, the religion, Christ as a physical person rather than the realization that we can do all that he's done and even greater things, anything that gets in the way of that, any bushel basket on that light is a graven image, in every case, bar none. And I'm actually mocked sometimes on some of the message boards, on some of the more scholarly websites, because I actually dare to say maybe we should actually live what he's saying rather than yakking about it and arguing about it and pointing our fingers in each other's faces about this or that. Maybe we should actually try putting it into practice. And I'm very, very happy to say that I'm smiling talking about it now. 10 years ago, I wasn't smiling. I took it very personally when I would take hits like that. But I love it because now what it enables me to do is to be brighter and to be even stronger in that knowing and to be even more fully present in this moment to allow that light to birth and to shine through me and to know that whatever someone feels in offense or in hostile or fearful judgment of what I'm doing or saying, I realize that it's about them. Now, if I go into hostility and fear about them, that's about me. So I'm honored to be a light, bright, strong, blazing catalyst for all of these people to let their stuff come up. And I'm also very happy to stand in presence and to offer them the hand, you know, across that space to say, look, I am right here to support you when and or if you are ready for that in this human life. When you're able to let that mask down, regardless of anything that you've ever said, judged, criticized me about for actually living this, I'm here, and I will be right here in any moment that I need to the greatest of my capacities, to hold, to stand right by you and hold your hand in mine and help you through these processes. So So scream on, judge on, point the finger. I'm fine with that. I am 100% fine with that. And understand that I'm here holding that space for you when you're ready. Whether you're ready or not in this human life, that's not a concern of mine. Just understand that I'm ready and I'm here, and I'm willing to put the pen to the paper and get back into the direct experience with anyone who's ready to drop that mask, anyone.
You go back and you listen to Yeshua, and he says, and I am there as that space with you for eternity. You know, the eternal aspect of life is often forgotten about, but Yeshua stands in that space, committed to be that space for anyone and everyone. And a lot of times the whole idea of someone turning for support to, say, one of the named saints is poo-pooed, but in fact, we are eternal beings. And if you happen to be one, Dale, who's handled a particular aspect of hostility or fear, if I happen to be one who's handled a particular aspect, or Jeannie, or Dr. Tim, or, you know, anybody else who's doing the work, then the person who's worked through that particular issue personally is the one who can most powerfully hold the space for someone else who needs to work through that issue. And so calling upon one, even though they're not in their bodies anymore, who has awakened as an eternal being, and we can literally call on that support and ask for that support, and it's there. So it's a powerful piece of information to understand. And Yeshua wasn't kidding when he said, I'm with you always. I am the space. I'm here, wherever you are. And, you know, there are people from time to time who say they actually interact with him, that he's visited them physically. So, you know, there's a whole lot of game in town from the one of the material world. And, you know, the tendency for the mind to make it, we have this God of matter and this science, or so-called science, that has this material God, and it worships at its altar, and it is totally and completely a religious system. And many people, when they speak about the graven image, they think, oh, the golden calf, it's a physical object. But no, I think it's a good thing to reinforce the point you made of. It's a mental construct. The graven image is a literal picture that your mind creates of something that isn't true, and that we need to be about collapsing those graven images instead of worshiping them. You know, the outside world comes in with force and says, you must believe this or you're going to hell. And now somebody has a graven image, and they just, out of that graven image, repeat those words, oh, this is it, this is it, this is it. And repeated with hostility and fear intoned in it. You know, if one is intoning hostility and fear, excuse me, I haven't got the truth yet, just isn't what it is. When you can intone your words out of the active presence of love, then you've got the truth happening. So, Dale, we're down to just a minute or so. Dale, tell us where you're going to be. Give us a schedule of it just quickly, so that anybody wants to catch you up there in Wisconsin or Chicagoland, tell us about what that means.
I'm in Coon Rapids, which is North Minneapolis, tomorrow and the next day. They can just go on my website to get the details. It was Saturday and Sunday. On Monday evening, I'm in at Unity South in Bloomington, Minnesota, which is south of Minneapolis. And then Tuesday night, I'll be actually at the Mindshifters group with Dr. Tim in Woodstock, Illinois, which I'm excited beyond words for.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
All right, so well, we appreciate you. Have safe travels, and give Lucinda a hug for us. We appreciate everybody who chooses to spend their time with us. Dr. Tim, you are certainly on the top of our appreciation list. We're going to be in at Unity in Las Vegas, or actually in Henderson, Unity in the Valley, doing Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing tomorrow morning, starting at 8 o'clock. And then we'll be out at Nye County Educational Center in Pahrump, Nevada next week. So check out the website. We'll be heading on up into the Washington State and keep track of what we're doing. Give the best gift you can possibly give to the world. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.